The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Amy Wentley for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the J.C. Ralston Arboretum website and from Garden Gate Magazine. We'll start off today with some events that are happening at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum in Raleigh during the next couple of weeks. So on Friday, May 22nd, 2026, we have Garden Story Time. It's an in-person event. You can bring your family, and you'll have a morning of outdoor garden fun. Garden Story Times are a great way for families with preschool children to experience the garden. The program begins at the visitor center, and you'll get ready for fun time outside together. And then you take a stroll through the garden with the children's program and volunteers, see what's happening in the garden. We read a couple of children's books, and you'll go home with a garden-themed craft designed by your little one. Suggested ages are 3 to 5 years old, although all ages are welcome, but books and activities will be planned for the suggested age range of 3 to 5 years old. It's $5 per child and no cost for accompanying adults. Please register for the program on the JCRA website. Thank you, thank you. And then the next one is the midweek program, and the midweek program happens every single week. It's on Wednesdays from 3 to 4. It is broadcast on Instagram. There you go. Woo! I'm good. And on Wednesday, May 27th from 3 to 4 on Instagram, you can see a program on cool European plants. And this program is presented by Tim Alderton, who is a research technician at the Arboretum. Tim isn't European. He's actually from Pennsylvania, which is the next best thing. And Eileen, Max, and Lana are going to join also. They are Croatian interns at the JCRA. And it will be a great presentation. You can join on YouTube on Wednesday, 27th. You can register online if you want, and they will send you instructions on how to join the program. The cost is free, and then it's also available on the Instagram channel for you to view at your leisure anytime after Wednesday. Okay, a propagation workshop is going to be held on Friday, May 29th, from 1:30 to 4:30 p.m., Beginner Softwood Cuttings. It's presented by Sophia McCusker, who is a nursery technician. It's this program is crazy good. You learn how to take stem cuttings, what rooting hormones are, how to care for cuttings as they root, and you start by learning propagation in the classroom setting, and then you go outside for a demonstration on how to take cuttings, and then you come in back inside and you're going to try your hand at propagating those. Now, the cost of the program is $150 for JCRA members, $200 for non-members, but be insured that you are getting all the materials to do this and to take home with you. And you'll be taking cuttings from the Arboretum's garden, which is amazing. So very well worth the cost. Please register online for that also. The day after, there is a workshop on advanced softwood cuttings, and that's led by Tim Alderton, the research technician. And that will be conducted the next day, so that's Saturday, May 30th, from 8:30 to 12:30. Same idea, same cost, $150 for JCRA members, $200 for non-members. They'll go into some more in-depth techniques at this advanced workshop. But, again, you will take cuttings. You will bring home all the materials are provided for you, and you'll bring home cuttings. planted cuttings. And then one more program, On the Hunt for Herps. It's a budding explorers program. It's a children's program on Saturday, May 30th, 10 to 12 p.m. Calling all explorers, join us for this exciting hands-on program where we dive into the fascinating world of herpetology. So youth participants, this is part of the Eco Explore program, and it's an incentive-based community science program developed by the Arboretum. So you make real-world observations, and you complete fun challenges. You don't have to have an Eco Explore account to participate. Program begins in the visitor center. The suggested ages are 8 to 10 years old, $8 per participant. No cost for a company, adult, and registration is available online. Please use it. Thank you. So that's it from the J.C. Ralston Arboretum this week and the next. So let's move on to our magazine today, which is Garden Gate. Our first article from Garden Gate magazine are reader tips. So these are great ideas from smart gardeners. To make it easier to get even coverage while sowing clover trifolium seed in the backyard, Ellen found that a mesh kitchen strainer was just the ticket. She added the seed and saved the strainer and gave the strainer a gentle shake from side to side as she walked. That's an awesome tip. And the picture shows one of those little handheld strainers, maybe that you could use, you know, to make a cup of tea or strain herbs or whatever. So, good tip there. A window well greenhouse. This is from Ali Suko from North Dakota. To sow a few flower and vegetable seeds indoors, Ali uses this clever and cost-effective DIY greenhouse. She secures the open sides of two sturdy plastic window well covers together with binder clips, and then she punches a few ventilation holes here and there to ensure that the air can circulate. But the dome still holds in the warmth and moisture, giving seeds the conditions they need to germinate. When it's time to move the seedlings outdoor, this simple setup is also ideal for hardening them off because it's easy to open during the day and close at night. The next tip is from Janine Adil from Pennsylvania, and she gives us a tip on catnip protection. While setting out a catnip Nepeta cataria transplant, Janine knew she needed a way to protect the plant from her feline friend Tiger, who would roll all over the new addition, damaging the stems and crown. An old hanging basket turned upside down was the solution. She placed it over the young plant and secured it with landscape pins along the rim, which allowed Tiger to sample a few leaves without causing any permanent damage. Janine leaves the basket in place for long-term protection, and has plenty of catnip for Tiger's enjoyment. And here is a self-watering hack from Sheila Haas in Indiana. The self-watering container Sheila had on her porch was a challenge to fill. The opening for water was too small for the hose, and since it sits on her full sun porch, the 13-gallon reservoir needed filling about every week in summer. So Sheila attached a 12-inch long piece of 1/4-inch tubing to the tubing adapter below. It's easy to screw on and off the hose, making it simple to fill the container without splashing or mess. Tubing adapters are available at local hardware or online stores. Sarah Goodwin from Colorado has this tip. A rice container turned out to be the perfect storage solution for Sarah's fertilizer. It has an airtight seal, so humidity won't cause clumping. And the measuring cup on top ensures Sarah gets the right amount for each of her perennials. Here's one from Dale Ketchum in New York. Pencil pushing. A big part of Dale's summer seemed to be putting his small rabbit ornaments upright after his dog or the neighborhood squirrels knocked them over. Tired of this never-ending garden chore, he came up with a simple solution. He pushed pencils a few inches into the ground in spots to match up with the holes in the bottom of the ornaments, and then fit the ornaments over the pencils. Now the rabbits stay upright where they can be enjoyed, and Dale has more time for other garden projects. The next article is called Spring Beauties, and it's written by Joanna Brichetto. And the spring beauty, the Latin name is Claytonia virginica. It's a perennial. Its blooms are delicate white-pink petals with pink veining. Looks like there's five petals on the flowers. The plants are ephemeral. The foliage fades away by early summer. Takes full sun to part shade. Needs moist, well-drained soil. The size is 4 to 12 inches tall, 6 to 9 inches wide, and it's cold hardy zones 3 to 8. So the long-lasting native spring beauty can bloom for many weeks in woods and lawns throughout a wide native range. The seeds go ballistic and eject themselves up to several feet away, but ants also play a role in seed dispersal. I had just sat down under our sugar maple tree, hoping to focus on nothing, when a bee buzzed by and focused on me. She was smaller, darker, and cuter than a honeybee, and I could have sworn I saw pink thighs, but she was definitely checking me out. Was she trying to tell me something? Sure enough, when I stood up, she flew to a tiny hole in the soil I had been sitting on. I didn't see it until she crawled right to it. She was a mining bee, fresh from her own winter nest, busy building a new one for her babies. Back then, I had no idea that Nashville had hundreds of species of native bees, each with her own requirements and timing. But I did know that some made nests in soil, and that I had finally caught one in the act. So I kept watching. Every time she left the hole, she ignored the sweet violets, early buttercups, and other blooms in the grass to visit only one species of wildflower, Spring Beauty. About the size of a dime, Spring Beauty's white-pink flower offers nectar and pollen to all sorts of insects. But I had met the one insect who cannot reproduce without it, a spring beauty bee, Adrina aeruginae, a pollen specialist. And get this, the pollen is pink. I was right about those pink saddlebags. If you don't believe me, check up this close-up view. And actually, yes, there is a flower printed. It's a five-pointed flower, and it's white petals with pink veins. And there is a bee sitting in the middle of the flower, and its legs are covered in pink fuzz. That's the pollen. So, how it works. The female gathers pollen, and only this particular pollen, to provision each of her eggs with a little pink cake. When an egg hatches, the larval bee eats the spring beauty pollen until it pupates. And then next year, when this wildflower blooms again, new adults emerge, ready to make more bees. Lawns in my neighborhood used to bloom with so many spring beauties they looked like they'd been sprinkled with snow. But in the 30 years I've been watching, along with even a hint of these flowers has become rare. When the plant disappears, the bees disappear. What if more neighbors knew about this wildflower sleeping in our seed bank? What if they knew about the charismatic little bee who depends on this flower, and that there are many other specialist bees as well? I know from personal experience that falling in love with just one native bee, butterfly, or bird can change everything, can change us. It's why I've shrunk the lawn, quit herbicides and pesticides, weeded invasives, planted natives, and written a book. I also know that we can't fall in love with what we haven't met, which could be, by the way, the best reason to take breaks under a sugar maple, even when trying to focus on nothing. You never know who might buzz by. Want to meet a spring beauty bee? Find the flowers and some sun between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Try when the day isn't breezy, so the only movement is a bee. If you see a flower tip under the bulk of a visitor, it's not a spring beauty bee. It doesn't weigh enough to bend a stem. If you see a small black bee with sparse white whiskers and saddlebags loaded with pale pink pollen, there she is, the real beauty of spring. Joanna is the author of This Is How a Robin Drinks, Essays on Urban Nature, writes about everyday wonders in everyday habitat loss on Instagram at @joe_brichetto and at sidewalknature.com. Now let's move on to our next article. Grow clematis in containers all year. And this article is by Cindy Tibbetts, and she owns Hummingbird Farm in Maine. Grow clematis in containers all year. Why settle for clematis scrambling up a far-flung fence or a distant obelisk when you can enjoy these spectacular blooms up close, right on your deck, patio, or balcony? Even gardeners in USDA cold hardiness zones 4 and 5 can grow these showy vines in containers year-round if they follow the tips from Cindy Tibbetts, owner of a specialty clematis nursery, Hummingbird Farm in Maine. Getting started. To grow great-looking clematis in a container, don't skimp on the pot size. Cindy recommends using a 24-inch diameter container. Larger is fine, too, so that the potting mix doesn't dry out too quickly and the roots have lots of room to grow. Cindy fills her containers with Happy Frog potting soil. This blend has big bark chunks that ensure good drainage and air circulation, both essential for preventing root rot, which can be a problem for clematis in containers. But any brand of mix with bark will work. Compact varieties work best in Cindy's containers. Those topping out at 6 feet tall or less are easier to manage. The varieties at right in this article, and I'll go over those in a minute, are some of her favorites and look spectacular throughout the nursery's seating and display areas. So I'm going to go over there over to the other page, and I will talk to you about the different clematis that Cindy has listed here, and I'll describe them for you. So the first one is called Sarah Elizabeth. It's a clematis hybrid that's pale pink. It has single flowers. It's got maroon anthers, so that's the middle part. I know you gardeners know that, but for those of us who just like listening to gardening stuff. Yep, the anthers are the part in the middle. And they grow, bloom from late spring to fall. They're 4 to 5 feet tall. They're in pruning group 3, cold hardy in USDA zones 4 to 9. So they're very pretty, kind of frilly looking flowers. The edges of the petals are a little rough, I guess, a little kind of bumpy. So they look kind of lacy and sweet and light. So B is Guernsey Flute. This is a white clematis. It's got little purple anthers in the middle. And 6 petals, bright white. Clematis hybrid. Guernsey Flute is a clematis hybrid. It's large, has 5-inch white flowers. And with red anthers, look a little purple to me. But from late spring to fall, they bloom. They're 3 to 4 foot tall, pruning group 2, and cold hardy in USDA zones 4 to 9. The next one is called Pilu, P-I-I-L-U. It is also a hybrid. It has double blooms. They are 4 to 5 inches. They're two-tone, pink. Pink on pink. Excuse me. They have single flowers until fall. 4 to 6 feet tall, pruning group 2. Cold hardy in USDA zones 4 to 9. Okay, the fourth one. Ooh, this is a beauty. It's called Bourbon. It's a hybrid. It's single, has single 5-inch red purple flowers, and they are deep, deep red purple. They are beautiful. In late spring to fall, they bloom 4 to 6 feet tall, pruning group 2, cold hardy in USDA zones 4 to 9. And the last one, it's Tranquillité. Clematis hybrid. It has star-shaped flowers. They have overlapping lavender petals that fade into a white center, and they bloom late spring to fall. 4 to 5 feet tall, pruning group 3, cold hardy in USDA zones 4 to 9. So let's continue on with our article. We're going to talk about how to keep clematis happy. Maintenance during the growing season is simple. Water and feed. Container-grown clematis can dry out more quickly than their counterparts in the ground. So check the potting mix regularly, especially when temperatures rise in the summer. You'll know the container needs watering when you stick your forefinger in the potting mix up to the first knuckle. And it's dry. While clematis aren't usually heavy feeders, those in containers need more attention because watering flushes the nutrients from the potting mix quickly, sometimes before the plant roots can access them. Cindy recommends using any liquid plant food, according to label directions, every week or two while the plants are blooming. One year, some of the clematis developed interveinal chlorosis. That's a yellowing between the veins as a result of the nutrient deficiency. A soil pH that's too alkaline is often the problem, but Cindy discovered that the well water at Hummingbird Farms had a pH of 8.2. If the pH is over 6.7, iron and magnesium can't be taken up by the plant, so yellow leaves develop. She solved this with a water-soluble acid formula plant food, which helped lower the pH, and now her clematis can take up nutrients properly. Prune roots and stems. After 2 or 3 years, the bark in the potting mix tends to break down. So it's a good idea to take everything out of the pot, add more mix, and replant your clematis. This provides fresh nutrients and keeps drainage sharp. When Cindy unpots the plant, most of the potting mix falls away. She takes this opportunity to do a little root pruning, which ensures plants can grow in the same container for years. To do this, she teases out the roots and keeps an eye out for any that are broken or diseased to cut away. Her rule of thumb, that is, if the roots won't fit neatly back into the pot without winding around, she cuts it back just enough to get it back into the container. Prune the clematis steps. Prune the clematis stems just like you would if it were growing in the ground. The varieties at right, the ones that I just went through for you, are all part of pruning groups 2 or 3. Cut group 3 clematis to within a foot of the crown in late winter or early spring, and clean up group 2 clematis by removing broken stems and shaping the vine. Trim long stems or reposition those that are going where you don't want them to. Getting container-grown clematis through the winter can be tricky. If you garden in zones 5 or colder, Cindy has some tips for you. Clematis winter care. Over the years, Cindy has tried lots of different ways to get clematis in containers through winter. Here are tips she learned from hard-won experience. Container materials matter. Gardening in USDA Zone 5, where winter temperatures regularly drop below freezing, Cindy learned an expensive lesson when several ceramic pots planted with clematis and left outdoors cracked and broke. Now she plants in wooden containers, which are both sturdy and drain well. Resin containers are also another reliable option for cold climates. Plastic pots are more of a temporary fix. They tend to get brittle and crack after a few years. For gardeners in zones 8 or 9, ceramic pots are an excellent choice as they won't face the destructive expansion and contraction that comes with freezing temperatures. Well, it looks like we have run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Amy Wentley, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 832-919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.